Welcome back to the Roundtable on this Wednesday morning, 13 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for an ailing Joe Donahue today, and you can join the discussion by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. An interesting day here on the panel. A, Joe is out sick. B, Alan Chartok not here today, which is as rare as a full solar eclipse. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Hello. How you doing?
You made it just... You really are an old pro. You walk in just as the music is playing.
With a cup of coffee.
You're like Bob Hope. Also joining us is political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post. Welcome, Libby.
Thank you. I'm in the exalted chair.
You're an Alan's chair today.
I am so excited.
Don't tell him.
I won't.
Okay.
Okay, no problem.
And also a newbie here today, The Empire Report's J.P. Miller. J.P., welcome to the show.
Ray, thank you a lot for having me on, Libby and Chris. Thank you for going easy on the rookie.
Don't make that expectation.
Yeah, don't count on that in any way.
For a minute or two.
Right.
Good to have you here.
We were just nice this morning, and
All right, great.
I was telling you before we went on the air that a lot of us who follow New York news really appreciate the Empire Report because it puts everything in one spot. It is a nice aggregator of New York news. Really nice.
Thank you. We've been doing it now for about 6 months, and I quit my job to do it full time. And it's a place where if you're into New York politics, it's a great place to be able to get what you need to see at the New York Empire Report.
Well, let's hope that your appearance today doesn't kill your career. But you never know.
I'm hoping.
Well, we start with sad news.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Bad news today. The reported death toll from a devastating earthquake in central Italy now stands at 38. That number expected to rise. It was a magnitude 6.2 quake. It struck early today, was felt across a broad swath of central Italy, including Rome, where residents felt a long swaying followed by many aftershocks. Italy's forestry police say they've rescued dozens of people from rubble in the town of Pescara del Tronto following this morning's powerful quake. The town was hard hit. There were earlier reports that at least 10 people were dead there. Officials also say a powerful earthquake measuring a preliminary 6.8 shook central Myanmar today. So not much we can say on a roundtable panel about that, except our thoughts and prayers are with those there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really.
President Obama said the nation is heartbroken by the loss of life during recent flooding in Louisiana. The president spoke in East Baton Rouge Parish as he toured flood damage in Louisiana yesterday. The president brushed off criticism by some who say he should have visited Louisiana last week during the height of severe flooding. The president said people getting help don't care about political parties. He said the government will keep working to help flood victims even after the TV cameras leave. He checked out the homes of some flood victims. A few of them wanted hugs. So the president has made his appearance.
And he did it the right way. There's no reason. I mean, every 2 years when we're in a major political cycle, I rewatch The West Wing just because it's like the best television ever. And there was one episode where Bartlett goes to Oklahoma. There was a bad, tornado. Right. Yeah. And it interrupted the rescue efforts. He stayed longer than he should have. He interrupted all the good work that was happening. He wanted to do it, but so Trump, not Trump. Obama knows he doesn't need to be there to make sure that things are getting done. The difference here is the FEMA response. The FEMA response from Katrina, which I have some firsthand knowledge of because my son was involved in AmeriCorps, to the FEMA response now. People are seeing federal dollars. They're seeing federal help. Before, it was great job, Brownie. And you know what the FEMA response was? It was the AmeriCorps kids. That's what it was. My son, who was 19, was running the Carnival cruise ship with a 21-year-old. They opened up a ship for people. And so, that's what's important here. People are getting the help that they need.
Yeah, so Obama was certainly right on his policy of not going down there earlier because as President of the United States, he brings along a big motorcade and it will certainly take resources away from the people that that are in need. But from a political perspective, it was striking to see Donald Trump, who had a horrible couple weeks, finally get a little bit of footing by having him giving out food to
Plato and a $100,000 contribution to Tony Perkins and the American the Family Research Council, which is a right-wing anti-gay registered hate group with the Southern Poverty Law Center. So I don't consider that to be really
up there. I would say that the media saw, and the media is certainly no fan of Trump, but you see him helping out victims down there, and Obama at the same time is golfing on Martha's Vineyard. I'm not saying it was wrong policy.
The optics weren't great.
The optics were worse than not great.
Of course, he's not running against Obama.
Right.
Well, if Trump is, in effect, running against Obama's policies over the last 8 years, and Hillary Clinton would certainly be a continuation of that. And I'm not saying Obama was wrong on the policy. He was right on the policy. He did what was right, but it was horrible optics for him to be on the golf course when Donald Trump's helping out victims down
there. Well, maybe
Louisiana.
It's not an Obama question then. Maybe Hillary should have been there, right? I mean, if this is a Trump versus Hillary thing and it's Obama is somehow affecting Hillary's race, then maybe she's the one who should have gone. I mean, maybe we're placing the blame at the wrong.
She still hasn't gone. That's the question is, where
she
is
knows, she knows too. She doesn't need to bring a large entourage down there and interrupt what's going on. You know, it's about the federal government's response to a crisis, and that's what's going on there. So, yeah, maybe she should go down at some point, but it's really about making sure that the people who are affected, who no longer have homes. You know, what I found slightly amusing about all of this, you know, Trump gave Perkins $100,000 for the Family Research Council. This is the man who said that Hurricane Katrina destroyed New Orleans because they had Southern Comfort, which is a big LGBT celebration every year, and that these massive weather things are God's retribution for us being good to the gays. His house was destroyed in Baton Rouge.
Wow. The email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in. It's the Roundtable panel. We're joined today by Times Union columnist Chris Churchill, political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post, and the Empire Report's J.P. Miller. I'm Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. We'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Backyard Sheds and Gazebos, Selkirk and Burnt Hills. Family-owned, helping customers for 20 years with storage solutions, offering Amish-made backyard sheds, custom garages, gazebos, and more. BackyardShedCO.com. Congregation Emmanuel Kingston, whose Saturday religious school offers classes in Hebrew, Jewish culture, history, art, music, and cooking for pre-K through 10th grade. TempleEmmanuelKingston.org. And Norman Rockwell Museum, Stockbridge, presenting The Visual Narrative, Three Perspectives with Marshall Arisman, Anita Kuntz, and Thomas Woodruff, Thursday, August 25th at 5:30 p.m., nrm.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable panel on WAMC. 20 minutes after 9 o'clock, Ray in for Joe. We're joined by Libby Post, J.P. Miller, and Chris Churchill today. Boy, the AP had a busy day yesterday, the Associated Press. Two reports, one on Hillary Clinton, one on Donald Trump, and we'll cover them both here today, starting with Hillary. More than half the people outside the government who met with Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State gave money to the Clinton Foundation, either personally or through companies or groups. It's an extraordinary proportion indicating her possible ethics challenges if elected president. At least 85 of 154 people from private interests who met or had phone conversations scheduled with Clinton while she led the State Department donated to her family charity or pledged commitments to its international programs. That's according to a review of department calendars released so far to the Associated Press. Combined, the 85 donors contributed as much as $156 million. The frequency of the overlaps fuels perceptions that donations were a key to gaining FaceTime with Clinton. Hillary's campaign is criticizing the AP analysis as flawed. Clinton's campaign says the Associated Press did not include meetings with foreign diplomats or U.S. officials, and that the AP examined only the first half of Clinton's tenure at the State Department. I know this irritates you, Libby Post, so you get to go first.
Well, yes, it does irritate me. I mean, it's one more attempt to swift boat Clinton. They keep coming up with stuff that is really sort of superfluous. Why don't they talk about real policy issues? And they can't, because she's on the right side of policy. And the fact is that Trump doesn't have any policy.
But you know, it does look like pay to play, though. You have to admit
it does,
that.
But when you look at the reality of the situation, okay, and that there was no, it looks like, it could look like pay to play, but there's no, there was no quid pro quo. There was no connect the dots. There was nothing in that, there's nothing.
Right. The donors may not have been paying for, they may not have gotten what they wanted for the money, but they may have gotten access for the money. And in some ways, you know, that's just as bad, right? They're getting access that the average person doesn't get because, and they're giving extraordinary amounts of money, too. This isn't like $25 checks here. You know,
no, but which
million
are,
dollars, 85 people.
But which are going to things like fighting sexual violence against girls in South Africa, microloans, fighting AIDS. I mean, it's going for good stuff. You take a look at the Trump Foundation. I went to GuideStar. You know, Clinton Foundation gets 100% rating from GuideStar, which is the nonprofit.
So nobody gets paid? Hillary's daughter doesn't get paid?
No. I didn't look at... No, they're talking about how the foundation is run from nonprofit principles, and they got an A-plus rating. You go and look at the Trump Foundation, zero on their 24990. Yeah,
it doesn't. I mean, the Clinton Foundation. It could be wonderful. It doesn't mean you should twist people's arms to get the donations or make people think that if they give, that they're getting access.
I think that if you read there's a piece in the Boston Globe. It shows that people called. They didn't necessarily get the meetings. Not everybody
some
got
obviously.
The meeting.
The donors, yeah, the big donors always get a meeting with Hillary Clinton. She's shown that over her career. And it's, I wouldn't say this is superfluous. This is, you know, if this was one isolated case, the American people might say, okay, let's give Hillary the benefit of the doubt. But this goes on and on with another thing with Hillary where the American people say, even though they don't like Donald Trump, they really don't trust Hillary Clinton. And the fact that, you know, if this was a Republican doing this, having over half their meetings with large donors, with donors from foreign governments, they would be hammered in the media. Hillary is going to be hopefully taken to task on this. And the Clinton Foundation expenditures are not going to all the best things. You know, they pay for Bill's private plane travel around the world to do whatever he wants to do in terms of spreading his goodwill around the world. But the Clinton Foundation is going to be a bigger and bigger issue for Hillary going forward.
This is kind of how politics works, right? We all know this. This is why we all don't like the system as it is, generally. But it also furthers this perception that she's the candidate of the status quo, the way things are, and that Trump is the outsider. Not that he would probably do anything differently.
No.
But, you know,
all of
quo.
His meetings, unfortunately, his meetings were private. Because he was a private citizen running a private company.
Well, he was the guy giving the donations, right? So, I mean, what did he give, $100 million to the Clinton Foundation himself? So, you know.
Back in the day when they liked
each other. Or maybe
it
was $100,000,
actually.
Right,
Yeah, I don't think it was I don't think he really has $100 million. To be really honest with you.
No, he didn't give $100 million to anybody, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think it was $100,000.
No,
he gave $100,000.
But he has
Foundation.
Raised the rent on Trump Tower now that the RNC is using his space.
I saw that.
Libby Post is on our panel today, as is Times Union columnist Chris Churchill and Empire Report's J.P. Miller. You can join the conversation by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. Well, we'll set this up before the news at the bottom of the hour, and then we'll probably continue with this. The other AP investigation, which was released yesterday, some of Donald Trump's paid campaign staffers have made raw, racially charged, and anti-Muslim statements on their personal social media accounts. An AP review of posts by current and former campaign staff found claims that Muslims are unfit to be citizens or judges, ridicule of Mexican accents, and a call for Secretary of State John Kerry's death by hanging. A similar review of dozens of Clinton campaign accounts turns up no such inflammatory material. Trump's campaign has not responded to questions so far after being shown some of the posts. Some staff postings or repostings have inflammatory racial material, at times even from people responsible for outreach to minorities. A graphic designer for Trump's advance team posted a video of a black man eating fried chicken and calling fellow African Americans ignorant. So that's the other side of the AP work today, and I'll throw it open to the panel in the last couple of minutes here before the BBC.
Well, you can see some of that on Trump's own Twitter feed, right? So, I mean, it's not that surprising to me that, you know, as the leader does, so do the subordinates.
Certainly, if staffers have racially charged comments that the campaign deems inappropriate, they should fire those staffers or those staffers should resign. It's kind of it's inexcusable. That is happening with staffers. What I will say is Donald Trump hasn't had campaign staffers for long periods of time, right? He's new to this. He's got new people. Maybe they didn't know they were going to be on a campaign. Those people should certainly be fired.
What about the vetting? I mean, did he not have the infrastructure at the top of his campaign to know this will look horrible if we hire this person? Don't you think they ought to vet these people?
Based on this alone, he should be firing Steve Bannon from Breitbart. Because Steve is just as bad.
Breitbart is all of that and
he's
more.
He's horrible.
Breitbart is all that and more, and that's the guy running the campaign
now. Right.
So, you know, you can't blame the staffers for something that's going on at the top. You know, Trump has surrounded himself with some really, really unpleasant people. Bannon is one. Roger Stone is another.
Roger Ailes now.
Roger Ailes. I mean, this
and
is
Kelly
kind of
Conway
part,
is
parcel of a campaign.
Just
at
a
this
nice
part.
Blonde.
But I wouldn't. If some staffers had some racially charged tweets, those are certainly inexcusable. But I think we're painting a broad brush here, maybe with some outlandish tweets, and then lumping in others that aren't as outlandish. I wonder, where was Hillary Clinton's vetting when she hired Uma Abedin, whose mother runs a Muslim extremist magazine, where Uma has been on the bannerhead for 12 years? You would think that a Secretary of State and a presidential candidate would have done a better job doing that. Vetting Uma Abedin, who is her top advisor, her most influential advisor, who Uma Abedin not only shows not great judgment with regards to Muslim extremist periodicals, but with her choice of people she associates with.
Carlos Danger.
Yeah. I didn't mean him.
Oh, really?
No, the other guy.
Some association,
you know, so
there.
So that's the sins of our fathers are wasted onto onto our sons. Is that what you're saying?
Well, she was I.
She's married to a Jewish man.
No, nothing.
You know, I mean, you know, he's
Trump's
not
own
the,
father
the best.
was reportedly a Klansman.
Much more concerning.
Looking at people's parents.
No, it's not. It's not much more concerning when
much more concerning
you can get,
about the parents.
It's easier to get killed by a white man with a gun in this country than it is with a radical extremist, Muslim extremist, as he likes to call them. So, you know, we can't say just because her mother's doing one thing, this is her stuff. She's married to a Jewish man. They have a child. She's committed to America. She's doing this work. You know, my father, my parents might have done things that I wasn't proud of, which isn't true. But, you know, does that mean that I need to be painted with a broad brush? Does that mean you do or any of us gets to be painted with a broad brush?
Well, she worked at the paper and her name was in the masthead, right? So it's not just her mother. Her name was in the masthead.
We will have to take a brief break here for BBC News. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Libby Post, Chris Churchill, J.P. Miller, yours truly, Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and we're joined today by Libby Post and Chris Churchill. Also today, first-timer J.P. Miller of the Empire Report. Nice to have you all here. And, you know, we forgot about the emails because Alan's not here to read the email. So now Sarah LaDuke brought me some emails to read. So here we go. This one's from Miguel, who says, what about these optics panel? The three lawmakers, all Republicans, who are criticizing the president for not coming to Louisiana, Representative Steve Scalise, currently the House Majority Whip, Bill Cassidy, who moved up to the Senate last year, and John Fleming, all voted against Hurricane Sandy relief. And that's from Miguel. This is from Tony. To whom it may concern, it would be you, panel. I have no problem with an investigation of the Clinton Foundation, but if they do that, they, whoever they are, need to investigate the Trump Foundation and Trump's finances. If they're not willing to do that, then no one gets investigated.
I think everything's being investigated. I mean, you know, there's been plenty of reporting on the Trump Foundation as well.
Okay. I would bet you're correct. Yeah. This one's from Lisa. Green Party candidate Jill Stein landed in Louisiana Sunday. She and Louisiana Green Party members have been providing shelter to some of the poorest, hardest hit residents, as well as helping to get gut houses of molded sheetrock. Jill also held a press conference yesterday that I watched on C-SPAN. Jill is the only presidential candidate who is dealing with climate change, and that's from Lisa.
We love Jill Stein. Go to her website, jillstein.com, please.
No calls to action here on Public Radio.
Right. Okay, I'm sorry.
You're new. Though.
I'm sorry, I'm a rookie.
We're going to let it slide.
Okay.
This one's from Hank. I don't want to hear about Hillary's emails or foundation improprieties anymore until Trump releases his taxes.
There's something to be said for that.
Well, no,
what is
not.
This man?
I mean, one's
yes,
an investigation, one is a release of taxes. It's quite
everybody
different.
Has released their taxes. Why isn't this man
well,
releasing
that's a,
his
that's
taxes?
Well, that's a fair question, but that should not be tied to an investigation.
Well, I don't agree because
wrongdoing.
Because it's about standards. He's trying to hold her to a standard where he's not living up to the standard of every other presidential candidate since what, Nixon? Or before?
Yeah, he should. There's no doubt that he should.
Agreed.
I think almost everybody, including most Republicans, says that.
Agreed.
I don't think that's controversial at all. But it doesn't mean that the AP can't do a nice investigation of the Clinton Foundation. Things are capable of happening simultaneously.
Yes. Yes, it's amazing how we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
This was from Gary regarding Hillary Clinton taking money for the Clinton Foundation in exchange for access. Weigh that against congressmen and senators taking money from big donors and then passing legislation favorable to the donors. So a politician is taking money in exchange for access and favorable treatment. I'm shocked, 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 I tell you. Round up the usual suspects. That's from Gary. And the
and
email.
A beautiful relationship we're going to have.
Email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. Libby, before the show, you emailed us a link from the Boston Globe.
Right.
And I know it is burning greatly in your soul at this moment.
Not really, but thank you for that. And let's preface this. It is an opinion piece by Michael Cohen, who's the columnist there. But he talks about how the Clinton email scandals are pure fiction and that all of this stuff with the foundation and the emails regarding the interaction between Clinton, the foundation, and the department when Clinton was Secretary of State, primarily between Aberdeen and foundation honcho Doug Bann, they become Exhibit A. But when you look at the evidence, it's not there. Like in 2009, Bann reached out to Aberdeen and asked if she could help put a Nigerian businessman of Lebanese descent in touch, who had donated money, in touch with a substance person. I don't know really what that means. Lebanon, that didn't necessarily happen. Or if they did, this is sort of business as usual. But because this guy is a donor, it's a scandal, you know? Aberdeen told Bann she'd reach out to somebody, the acting Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs. According to a New York Washington Post article, they never spoke to the guy. No one ever told me he was seeking me out. Never happened.
I'll agree with him that we don't have clear evidence of a quid pro quo.
Right.
Right? But, I mean, you almost never do because that's really difficult to prove. But we do have clear evidence of people buying access. Do you agree with that much at least?
I don't think it's about buying access. I think that this is – I think access, like what that letter that just – that Ray just read.
From Gary.
From Gary, you make a contribution, there's an expectation. This is the way – until we have wholesale cleanup of our political system, this is going to be the way it's going to continue to be. If Preet Bharara has done anything in New York, he has stifled that to a degree.
But this is outside of that, though, because this isn't about campaign contributions. This is about a foundation, right? I mean, even if we clean up the whole mess of campaign contributions, these weird foundations off to the side, and the Clintons are in a very unusual place, right? Because you've never had a former president married to a potential president.
Right.
So
married to a Secretary of
State. Why people
are
giving money to this foundation, it's different than every other presidential foundation we've ever seen before.
And if I'm Doug Bann, who's worked with the Clinton family for 20 years, one of their most trusted people, and I get a call from a Nigerian businessman, I say, you know what? That's not really the business we're in. We don't want to provide access for Nigerian businessmen.
I get emails from Nigerian businessmen all the time. Should I not respond to them?
What are you saying? Give them your social security number. It's worked for me.
So these people, Doug Bann and Uma, unfortunately, they need to keep themselves to a higher standard than any, Jobel on the street who does business with Nigerian businessmen. And that's just one email. I couldn't imagine calling the Secretary of State asking for access for a Nigerian businessman. It sounds crazy to Americans. It sounds crazy to us.
He should have just emailed. Maybe he would have gotten better.
It's
again, I've not seen any proof that she actually acted because somebody gave her the money, but they did get the access, it seems.
Well, but access and action, let's connect the dots and see what really happened. And if these people did not get the access they were wanting, then nothing happened.
They got plenty of access, and you're never going to, if you're waiting for an email to say, I will give the Clinton Foundation $1 million if you do this, if you're waiting for that email, you're never going to see it. And if that is the standard by which you're holding elected officials to be corrupt or not, you're never going to see it. No one's corrupt by that standard.
And access matters too, because, I mean, everything that they're, when you're meeting with somebody who gave you money, even if it's just a meeting, that's something, it's taking away from something else that you could be doing on behalf of somebody else, right, who maybe didn't give money.
Well, but you're making the assumption that only the people who gave money got access, and that's not true.
Well, it was, the number, 86 out of 150?
Out of the first 2 years, and it doesn't include diplomatic. Yeah. It didn't include diplomatic visits. So the numbers were a bit skewed. But elected officials, they do their jobs to the best of their ability. They have donors. They don't have donors. You know, Senator Pothole, Al D'Amato, mm-hmm. as an example. If you weren't a Republican on Long Island, you didn't get service. And I have firsthand experience with this. You didn't get any service from him.
Well, this...
And so the party affiliation, the money, it's all part of the process. From my perspective with all of this is it's just one more swift boat attempt to undermine her.
But when you
talk
say,
about policy,
but when
talk
you say it's
about
all part
something
of the process,
real.
That just makes it sound like, oh, here are the Clintons, the status quo, blah, 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 you know, the way it's always been and the way it's going to keep being. You know, I think people are hungry for a change.
Yeah,
from
I do. I think so, too. And I would like to see okay. change. But Trump is not the answer.
Policy is good. Policy is important. Does character factor in when one is
I think factor
character
absolutely factor character factors in, but look at the difference of the two players we've got here.
I would also say on being Secretary of State and accepting these donations, I think voters are used to senators and congressmen giving access for donations. It's happened forever and it continues to happen. That's part of the reason why they're so disgusted. But did Condi Rice or Madeleine Albright or Colin Powell or Jim Baker, did past secretaries of state ever have side foundations
right,
by which
I don't know.
I want a meeting?
Don't know if that's true. It's such a weird situation.
Well, I know is they didn't. They absolutely didn't. There would have been a lot of news stories about it if Jim Baker or Condi Rice or Colin Powell or Madeleine Albright had some foundation where, hey, I want a meeting with Hillary. Let's give $500,000 to the Clinton Foundation. It it's unprecedented in politics, and that's the Clintons play by one set of the rules. The perception is they play by one set of the rules. Everybody else plays by another set of rules.
That's rookie Empire Report's J.P. Miller, and he's really warming up to the task. Also on the panel today, Chris Churchill and political consultant and lobbyist Libby Post. It's the Roundtable. Our email address is roundtable@wamc.org if you want to weigh in on this or anything else. We'll take a break.
Support for WAMC comes from Behold New Lebanon, the Living Museum, where farmers, cheesemakers, animal trainers, homesteaders, and 40 more locals show how they work and live in contemporary rural America. Saturdays through October 15th, beholdnewlebanon.org. Kimlin Propane, installing and providing propane services for homes and businesses throughout Ulster, Orange, and Sullivan counties. KimlinPropane.com. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, Chinese and Asian antiques, fine art and estates. MarkLawson.com. And Freeling Heisen Morris House and Studio, Lenox. Works by Cubist masters, frescoes and furnishings of the 30s and 40s, set on a 46-acre estate. Hourly guided tours, Thursdays through Sunday. FreelingHeisen.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's 9:45. It is a Wednesday morning by my calculation. It's the Roundtable panel. Joe's out sick today, so we're holding the fort. And you know Alan today, which is very rare. Alan is somewhere, I don't know where he is, but he's not with us today, and we're missing him, especially when it comes to the emails. Roundtable@wamc.org. I'll try to read these. This is from Josh, who says, love the show, and I would ask, are you tuned to the right station? Josh says, Trump staffers said prejudiced things on social media. Clinton staffers rigged the primary in their favor. Libby sounds like the Democrat version of the Trump defenders on CNN. Nobody who supports Trump will be swayed by blindly pro-Clinton rhetoric. Libby, do you want to?
No, that's fine.
You want to stick out your tongue?
Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
Amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. This is from Deanne. I disagree that Trump's past behavior and interactions have been investigated as much as Hillary, because her past is all public. She is under scrutiny, but Trump's past has been largely hidden. Why are you focusing so much on her and not on his past?
I think if you've looked at any of the, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, there's been plenty of focus on Trump's past.
I would also point to the last 1 year of roundtable panels.
Yeah. These people are both running for president. Both their past should be fully vetted and investigated.
Okay, this is from Mark. Kudos for finally having someone on who at least tries to see some things from Trump's point of view. That might be JP, I think.
Yeah.
Hope he stays. I feel it's more balanced now as opposed to extremely biased before. Well, JP, there you go. You may never be back.
I may never be back.
We'll find out.
if some other people are back, he'll be back.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And he's doing a great job for a rookie. This is from Joe. Good morning. At this time, Trump has taken on Larry Kudlow as an economic advisor. He worked for the Reagan White House and espoused the famous and deeply flawed trickle-down theory of economics. It didn't work in the previous century. It won't work in this century unless one is at the top of the heap. What this country desperately needs is a massive infrastructure program to maintain, upgrade, and improve our country as it has been put off for too long. That is from Joe.
And he's also brought on Michelle Bachmann as a foreign policy advisor.
Is he really?
Yes.
No, I heard that. I didn't actually see the report. Is that true?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough. This is from the New York Times. Think Hillary Clinton will win in a landslide? Don't bet on it. This is a piece by Jeremy Peters. Donald Trump, after weeks of self-inflicted damage, has seen support for his candidacy in national polls dip into the 30s, Barry Goldwater and Walter F. Mondale territory, while Hillary Clinton has extended her lead to double digits in several crucial swing states. Time to declare a landslide, right?
No.
Not so fast, says Jeremy Peters of the New York Times. The vote may be more favorable to Mr. Trump than the worst-case scenario prognosticators suggest for a very simple reason. Landslides do not really happen in presidential elections anymore.
Yeah, it could be an electoral college landslide, mm-hmm. but not a percentage vote landslide.
Right, and I think they have to keep lowering expectations, because
who has to lower
the Clinton campaign? Because if people keep going out there saying we're going to win, one of the things the points that were made in the piece was that there'll be protest votes. You know, oh well, she's going to win anyway, so I'll vote for Jill Stein, or I'll vote for Donald, or I'll vote for the other guy. So I think they have to lower expectations. I think you're right. I think it'll be 45-55. I think it'll be somewhere between there, and I don't know if it'll be 48-52.
I don't think she'll get over 50. I think she's looking more like 47-46, and he'll be
So the 15% will come off the top.
I think that's going to stay. I think there's so many people who don't like either one. Those numbers will either stay or maybe even grow a little bit.
I think right now it's impossible to predict, because you have Donald Trump, who has been off message for the last 3 months, finally has had the last 10 days where he's been on message more or less and actually putting some wood on the ball on Hillary Clinton. And we have three debates coming up. Debates are what people mm-hmm. think are one of the hugest, biggest determining factors of a presidential election, and it is going to be must-see TV Clinton and Donald Trump debate each other.
It is true, though, that this is not a typical election, so all previous examples are probably not worth it looking at. But it is true that things do tend to harden, and debates don't mm-hmm. always move things as much as people think they're going to. It might be a point or two here or there. I mean, if Trump could come out and really seem presidential and really seem knowledgeable about the issues, he might be able to sway some people who are worried about him. But those are two big ifs.
But I think what you said at the beginning is it's going to be an electoral college landslide.
And you make a point, because in 1992, if you recall, Ross Perot was involved. Mm-hmm. And Ross Perot, I think, got 8 or 9% of the vote. And Bill Clinton, got 43%, but yet got 370 electoral votes, right, which is enormous. Perot was on the ballot again in 96. Clinton, again, only won 49%. So I think that the third party candidates here are the key to what happens.
I think, too, if Trump were running against anybody else, he would lose in a landslide. And I think that mm-hmm. if Hillary were running against anybody else, she would lose. Probably not in a landslide, but I think she would lose.
Except
I think that you have two candidates who could only beat the other candidate. It's good. It's kind of like a...
I don't know if Bernie could have beaten Trump, to be quite honest with you, because I think... if Bernie was the nominee, and I know people are going to write in and, I'll be lynched for this, but if Bernie was the nominee, RNC would have been able to really done a number on him. Commie Pinko Fag is what they would have said about him, and that's all you would see. And, I do think that if Bernie was the nominee, there would be a possibility of a Trump presidency, despite what all the polls had said.
Yeah,
I think they would have done a number on him.
Maybe, but although he could at least, not be the status. He wouldn't have all this stuff with the emails.
Yeah,
and
Bernie would have been a much more difficult candidate for Donald Trump to run against than Hillary. Hillary's the only candidate that is allowing Donald Trump to actually stay in this thing with her. And it's not just the scandals of 2 months ago and 4 months ago. It seems to be one or two new scandals each week with Hillary Clinton, and that is allowing Donald Trump to stay in this thing. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win, but he has an opportunity to win by being the change candidate if he can stay on message over the next couple months, which he has proven unable to do thus far. If he does do that, it will give him a chance to do something.
And I think that change candidate thing is the important part, because I think people are so hungry for change that they're willing, they're giving him a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt than they would give would normally give him.
The thing about the scandals, though, it's been 25 years of going after her, going after them, and she's still standing. And
but she's also got very unpopular. I mean, yeah, she's still standing, but she's also, I don't know what the latest unapproval rating is, but it's something like 70%, right? I mean, people, it has taken a toll on her, and it is wearying for people. They're, you know, who wants 4 or 8 more years of this?
It is tough because at running a campaign, you want one thing to hammer the opponent on. And Hillary, unfortunately, has a lot of things, and voters are used to hearing it. And I think voters kind of, it goes one ear and out the other. They've been hearing it since she was trading cattle futures back in the 80s and 90s. You know, so they've been hearing it for a long time.
It's the what else is new? Tell me something new.
Correct. I agree
and
with
so
that.
So it's like, okay, fine. And it just goes right off their back.
And Trump gives them something new every day.
Yes, he certainly does.
So if we take massive voter dissatisfaction with both candidates as a given, can we expect a further surging of the independent party candidates?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe a little bit, but yeah, a lot of people think if the Gary Johnson Bill Weld ticket was reversed, that Bill Weld could do some damage.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I mean, if they can get into the debate, I think maybe yeah.
The key is they will make a huge difference if it's a close election. You see what Ralph Nader did with Bush Gore down in Florida in the year 2000. Many people would say he determined the election by taking votes away from Gore. If it's a close election, then the third-party candidates have a huge potential impact in those states where they can take a couple percentage away in Ohio and Florida. That can really, really turn an election.
The thing that's different in this circumstance, though, is that they seem to be taking pretty much evenly from both. You know, when you do the two-way polling versus the four-way polling, there isn't that much different of a spread because there are a lot of Republicans who are dissatisfied with Trump who are going to the Libertarian ticket, and Democrats are going to Stein. So I don't know that you'll be able to point and say, aha, that's what cost so-and-so the election the way that you could in 2000.
It's going to be where the independents go.
I'll tell you, we may be talking about this in the future. I had a feeling
you
that
think?
This
another 8 weeks at least.
This wretched election cycle will never end. The email is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. The FBI is investigating cyber intrusions targeting reporters of the New York Times and is looking into whether Russian intelligence agencies are responsible for the acts. That's according to a U.S. official. The Times reported Tuesday evening that the attempted cyber attack targeted the newspaper's Moscow bureau, and that there was no evidence that it was successful. A spokeswoman says no internal systems at the newspaper have been compromised. My question is, so this is news? I mean, since the Soviet days, have they not been doing this?
Yeah. New York Times apparently has better security on their email than Hillary Clinton does.
or the
State Democrats
Department
do.
Did. Yeah.
And it's just the Moscow Bureau? It's not even the New York Times in New York?
Well, that we know of.
Unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. You ever get concerned, Chris Churchill, that your phones are being tapped and people are checking your email?
Not too much.
No?
I mean, they can if they want to. There's not, right. not going to be very interesting for them.
If they want to get the scoop on that Beagle story.
They'll fall right asleep.
Right.
So no one overly concerned about this.
Well, I was sort of shocked when I saw it yesterday. I mean, I know that it's happened before, but it's just like, it's such bald-faced maneuvers by the Russians to do as much hacking as they're doing, and it's like they're putting out a press release every time they do it. It's amazing to me, and that they're not keeping it secret.
Yeah, they are being pretty blatant about
it.
Yeah,
I mean, they are.
That is true.
And that's
end,
really something.
I wonder, what strategic end to make it so public?
To mix it up and to put everybody off balance and to get Donald Trump elected. I mean, I really do think it's in Putin's best interest to have Donald Trump there.
And it's a further lesson to us and to your listeners that, you know, anything that you put in email ever can be found. And you see this with Preet Bharara. You see this with hacking. Don't put anything into email that you don't want on the cover of the New York Times one day.
I mean, we talked about the Hillary email scandal now for so long. Now, there are two separate scandals. The one is the pay-to-play alleged pay-to-play. The original was the server. And at that time, panelists here said, well, this is going to blow over. This is going to be nothing. Here it is now, 80-some-odd days till the election, and it is still quite something.
But again, there's email fatigue. There's fatigue to all of this. People who are not engaged like we are and don't live and die on this stuff, all they say is see is email. Email, email, email. So, yeah, again, it's email.
Are you underestimating the intellect of the general population by saying that?
No, I'm estimating their desire to get drawn into politics. You know, I went to my 40th high school reunion, and people, some people there were engaged. The majority of them were like, oh, I can't wait until this is over.
Yeah.
And so, but I just want to say, I have something on my Facebook page that speaks to it. Dance like nobody is watching, text and email like we'll be read in court someday.
That's awesome. Yes. Yes. So on the emails, it has been litigated. James Comey came out with his recommendation that she not be indicted. The big question that I've heard from a lot of people is, does Julian Assange or WikiLeaks, do they have a bunch of Hillary's deleted emails that they're going to release after Labor Day when people are really paying attention? So if there aren't more emails released, it may kind of go along with just another Hillary scandal. But if he has emails with red flag things from Hillary and Uma and Doug Band, it could be a blockbuster September, October surprise for the campaign.
And he is hinting that he has something like that.
So if the conspiracy theorists among the Pelosi's of the world say that this is all a Russian plan, and in fact Trump were elected, you know they got plenty on Trump that they will release after he's elected.
Right. And let's not forget, this is Julian Assange that we're talking about. This is a man who is waiting to be extradited to his homeland to be charged on sexual assault. This is a man who just exposed government secrets and that he has, you know, gathered. And in doing that, he has, in the past year, published medical files belonging to scores of ordinary citizens, while many hundreds more have had sensitive family, financial, identity records. He has outed a Saudi citizen, you know, as a gay person. That person is marked for death now. He has published the names of rape victims, and both men and women. He has done things that are totally irresponsible and has absolutely nothing to do with politics.
All right, that's where we will have to leave it. Libby Post, thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Ray. It was wonderful to be here with you.
Empire Reports, J.P. Miller. Well, I don't know. Are you traumatized? Will you ever be back now?
I had a great time.
No way.
Had a quick plug, the New York Empire Report. I hope your readers will check out my website. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Chris Churchill, when is the Beagle Report coming out?
Tomorrow, potentially.
At the Times Union. It's timesunion.com. Our email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Hour 2 of the roundtable, straight ahead.